Gauleiter Foster of Danzig made an important speech at a Danzig protest meeting this evening. She declared, "In these serious times, we have gathered here tonight in the marketplace in Danzig to protest against the provocative war threats against Danzig made by countless Polish speakers and newspapers in recent weeks. It is not true, as foreign journalists believe, that tonight's protest meeting has been carried out to make a new sensation. The position is all too serious. We Danzigers would naturally prefer not to have to hold such protest meetings, but the daily threats from the Poles force us to do so. The people of Danzig have proved that they love peace. They have ignored Polish threats for a long time. As long as these threats of war from the Poles only came from isolated individuals, we did not find it necessary to discuss the problem at all. Today, however, in view of the fact that these war threats are also coming from official circles in Poland, we are forced quite clearly and definitely to express our opinion. It looks as though Poland no longer thinks of returning to common sense. On the contrary, they are doing everything possible to increase the hatred against everything German. I want to underline that we are going unmistakably to state our opinion not to cause unrest and trouble in the world, but in order to show those who have been trying to stir up war for many months that we have a right to be heard, as is proved by statements of the Polish papers. It is impossible to answer all these attacks, but the Poles should note the following facts. Firstly, war threats will cause no anxiety whatsoever in Danzig. Secondly, we National Socialists have taken care that the Danzig population do not lose their nerve because, in view of past experiences, they have complete faith in the National Socialist leadership. Thirdly, in recent weeks we have done everything in Danzig to oppose and to answer any attack, no matter of what kind. Fourthly, Poland should be quite clear upon the point that Danzig is not alone in the world, but that the German Reich, our motherland, and our Führer Adolf Hitler are ready, in case of an attack upon Danzig, at all times to stand side by side with us in opposing it. All peace-loving people must finally realize what a crime was committed by the Treaty of Versailles with regard to Danzig and the frontiers in the east. Not only leading Germans realize this, but also many leading and well-known persons in foreign countries, particularly in England and France. They have realized the impossibility of the situation for the last 20 years. Herr Foster then gave a number of statements by important Englishmen and Frenchmen on the Danzig situation. The other peoples, in particular the English and the French and the Poles, concern themselves with the future of Danzig as if Danzig were English, French, or Polish. If anyone has the right to concern himself with the future of Danzig, then we Danzigers have that right. It is our oldest right to decide upon our future. With regard to this, the following points should be emphasized. Firstly, Danzig, since its foundation roughly 8 centuries ago, has always been a German town. Secondly, in the whole of Danzig's history, up to the year 1919, only Germans have taken decisions. In 1576, the Danzigers alone opposed and defeated the Polish king Stephen Batory with the force of their arms and made him capitulate when he tried to take away the rights, in particular sea rights, of the old German Hansa town. We Danzigers today fear the cannons of Rietschmigui just as little as our fathers feared the cannons of King Stephen Batory. Thirdly, in 1919, despite many protests from her people, Danzig was torn away from her motherland. Point 14 of President Wilson's promises was thus neglected in a revolting manner. Fourthly, the years since we were torn away from Germany have brought irrefutable proof that Danzig and her people have suffered all sorts of economic and cultural disadvantages. Even the fact that the Danzig harbor was meant to be Poland's only way to the sea, which was said to be responsible for tearing Danzig from the Reich, is disproved today as Danzig, compared to Gdynia, is now in the second place. In other words, Danzig has only economic disadvantages from Poland and no advantages. Point 5. The treatment of the Danzigers by Poland in all branches of public life is cause enough for the Danzigers to declare, "We wish to go back to the Reich." Point 6. The Danzig population is quite clear in their belief that the hour of freedom is coming when Danzig will return to the Reich. Point 7. In unity and filled with love and honor for their leader Adolf Hitler, the Danzig people are sure that he will bring about their desire for a return to the Reich, and that thereby the right to self-determination of the Danzigers, which they were denied in 1919, will be given to them again. In this hour, I do not believe I can do better than to say that we will stick together, come what may, and that we shall oppose with all weapons at our disposal any attack on this holy German soil, and will carry out any orders given to us by our leader, Adolf Hitler. May the day not be far off when we shall once again gather here, no longer to protest, but to celebrate the reunion of Danzig with the German Reich.
Though there was no increase of tension over the weekend in Europe, the mysterious comings and goings of the Axis diplomats continued. Today they seem to have had their center at Rome. Canciano, the Italian foreign minister, unexpectedly returned to Rome by air from Albania this evening. Signora Tonico, the Italian ambassador to Germany, also arrived in Rome tonight. Signora Tonico's movements have been rather mysterious of late. On Friday he left Rome for Berlin and was not expected back for several days. He has now returned, however, and is reported to have seen Herr von Ribbentrop at Munich. The German Minister of Finance, Gahn-Schwerin von Krosigk, is expected in Rome tomorrow. This activity in diplomatic circles has given rise to many rumors in Rome. Count Csáky, the Hungarian foreign minister, who conferred with Signor Mussolini and Count Ciano on Friday night, is understood to have spent today at Montecatini, near Florence, with the Hungarian minister in Rome. It is believed that Count Csáky will have a further conference with Count Ciano tomorrow. Today, for the first time, the Polish press replies to the German atrocity campaign against Poland. The official Polish agency emphatically denies the truth of German press reports of terrorism against the German minority in Poland. The Danzig Nazi leader, Herr Förster, declared in Danzig today, "Come what may, you can be sure that the Führer will enter Danzig soon." He was addressing an open-air meeting of party officials, and most of his speech consisted of a violent attack on the Poles. He said that they were making fantastic demands for the reorganization of Central Europe, and he repeated the allegations of a reign of terror directed against the Germans in Poland. Herr Förster made a spectacular entry to the grandstand from which he delivered his speech. He was dressed in white and was preceded by a band and a detachment of police. A trade and credit agreement between Soviet Russia and Germany was signed in Berlin yesterday. It provides for a German credit to Russia of over £16 million for 7 years at 5% interest, for the purchase of German goods within 2 years. It also provides for the sale of goods by Russia to Germany within the same 2 years to the amount of about £15 million. Both the British and Japanese foreign offices today issued statements on the Tientsin talks. The Japanese statement says that all the points raised, including economic, can be dealt with by Britain within her competence, and adds that there is no reason to claim that they are not of a local character. It says that if the British government intends to invite the intervention of third powers in an attempt to seek a favorable conclusion of the negotiations, then the Japanese government would not admit such an attempt, which would only serve to delay and complicate the negotiations. The statement adds that it is beyond the comprehension of the Japanese government how discussion on the nine-power treaty can be useful in settling the Tientsin issues. The British statement points out that the scope of the economic proposals is not confined to purely local issues, but affects other powers. For this reason, the British government has come to the conclusion that it cannot alone deal with proposals which might prejudice the interests of third parties, and they have therefore intimated to the Japanese government that no useful result can be reached by discussions on a purely Anglo-Japanese basis. The British government has expressed their willingness to examine the position afresh, and their statement says that for this purpose, it would presumably be necessary for both governments to consult with and have regard to the views of third parties. The British statement adds that the British government have indicated to the Japanese government that they have no desire to shelve the questions which have been raised, and that they are ready to consider any constructive proposal regarding the modification of existing treaties. But they consider it essential that all parties to the Nine-Power Treaty and other treaties which govern the situation in China should be enabled to express their views. At Tientsin, floodwaters have inundated all the low-lying parts of the city, and the surrounding countryside is now a vast lake. Refugees are flocking into Tientsin, and barricades have been constructed to stem the floods. The Prime Minister, Lord Halifax, are tonight travelling to London for Tuesday's meeting of ministers arranged before Parliament rose. Mr. Chamberlain is returning from a fishing holiday in Scotland, while Lord Halifax had spent the day in the country. The Imperial Airways flying boat Caribou has arrived at Port Washington, thus completing the third British Atlantic Airmail flight. Mr. Henry Morgenthau, United States Secretary of the Treasury, arrived at Helsinki today by air. He said he had come to thank Finland officially for her regular war debt payments to America. Two Jewish labor leaders in Palestine, Mr. Katznelson and Mr. Locker, have condemned Jewish acts of terrorism in speeches at the Zionist Congress in Geneva. Mr. Katznelson said today, "We are willing to pay any price for Palestine, but we are not willing to pay any price for acts of sheer folly." He expressed the conviction that terrorism would have no effect on British policy. That is the end of the news. Here is the weekly newsletter. For weeks past, as we have recorded Sunday after Sunday, Europe has been undergoing what has been called a war of nerves. And no one here in London is surprised that this campaign of threats and alarms has been intensified as August proceeded. This last week, the German campaign has taken on quite a new virulence. Up to last weekend, the controlled press in Germany had been throwing discredit on Poland, but the main brunt of the campaign was then the repetition of the German claim to Danzig. This weekend, on the other hand, Danzig is in the background. Those who have said all along that Danzig was a mere pretext for getting control of Poland's outlet to the sea and making her a vassal of Germany appear to be justified by this new press campaign. For the accusations against Poland are almost precisely the same as those which were levelled against Czechoslovakia last year. The parallel is in everyone's mind. All the stories of the German minority in Poland being maltreated are repeated with a wealth of detail which does credit to the imagination of the propaganda ministry. No doubt some Germans in Poland's western frontier districts have been persuaded without much difficulty to return to Germany. They had once become pitiful refugees. Press photographers meet them at the frontier. Reporters write harrowing accounts of the atrocities to which they have been submitted, and the German newspapers are filled almost from cover to cover with accounts of the persecution from which they have escaped. The whole procedure is now too familiar to require elaboration. But the thing that makes the outlook black in the eyes of observers here is that once a totalitarian regime has embarked on a campaign of this kind, the machine cannot easily be reversed. When a situation has been described as an intolerable insult to a country's honor, then a regime like that of the Nazis may not be able to go back, even if it wants to. In Berlin, the public have been told nothing of what is going on, but they see all the familiar signs of crisis and suspect that a decisive step is not far off. Besides the press campaign, they have other threatening signs. Germany has probably 2 million men under arms. On all her frontiers, troop movements and preparations are being carried out on such a scale that there is no knowing what are normal maneuvers and what may be strategic movements. Petrol is being reserved in some places for the army, and requisitioning is being conducted on a wide scale. The German man in the street does not know that copper and rubber are being bought on a large scale in London, but these purchases have sent the prices of both commodities up to new high levels. In Italy, people are no less anxious. Messages reaching London from Rome indicate that Italy would have liked to get together a general conference to try to stop these recurrent European crises, and there have been plenty of reports of efforts to start such a conference. But the German government has repeatedly declared that no compromise is possible, and Italy gives public support to her claim on Danzig. Whatever private opinions may be, Italian official policy is one of close collaboration with Germany, and other countries can only accept her declarations about the solidarity of the Axis. One of the most mysterious of last week's activities was the journeying of Count Csáky, the Hungarian foreign minister. He had seen Herr von Ribbentrop just before Count Ciano's visit to Salzburg. He went back there last week and saw Herr Hitler besides Herr von Ribbentrop. The German government, whether merely to create a mystery or for some better reason, denied both interviews, but Count Csáky went on to Rome, where his arrival was obviously quite unexpected. In order to see him, Count Ciano had to postpone a visit to Albania, even after the Italians had already announced his departure. Signor Mussolini also took part in the conversations, which occupied only one evening. The conjectures about Count Chunky's visit are too many to detail, and none of them can be more than guesses. The most persistent suggestion is indignantly repudiated by Hungarian officials. That is, that Germany is pressing the Hungarian government into some far-reaching agreement, such as a military alliance, or at least into conceding the right of passage to German troops. There is no doubt that Count Chunky's activities have caused uneasiness in Romania and Yugoslavia, as well as in Hungary, but there is no direct evidence to contradict the official denials of pressure. Hungary and Poland are both bound to note with some care the conclusion of a new military treaty between Slovakia and Germany. The Germans say it means nothing new, but other reports indicate that the way may have been formally cleared for German troops to use the whole of Slovakia. The importance of the treaty is at most that of a formal step, because since the spring, there has been nothing to stop the German military penetration of Slovakia, and it has in fact been proceeding. But military developments in that territory must give Hungary concern for her northern frontier and Poland for her southern one. Poland, the first and direct object of German aims, has pursued a steady and unruffled course. The Polish government has been most careful to avoid doing anything to aggravate the situation, but there has been no sign whatever of any wavering in Poland's determination to defend all her vital interests. Some people thought they saw a sign at the beginning of last week when it was learnt that Professor Burkhardt, the League High Commissioner in Danzig, had been to see Herr Hitler. But Professor Burkhardt went to Vesta's garden purely on his own responsibility, and the Polish government was in no way involved. That visit has very much dropped into the background now that it can be seen in its right perspective. There is no reason to suppose that it changed the situation in any important respect. Since Dr. Burkhardt's return to Danzig, the Polish commissioner there, Monsieur Chodatsky, has twice met Herr Greiser, the president of the Senate. And the second time, Dr. Burkhardt was also present. The talks were expected to be confined to the customs dispute, though one report says that the status of the Free City was broached at the second meeting and that the discussion got nowhere. The position of Polish customs officials is no clearer than it was, and the big murdering factory is still closed down because it can't get its products into Poland without admitting Polish customs inspectors. The Nazi forces in Danzig, whose existence was so flatly denied a few weeks ago, had their first big public parade the other night, and the new motor road from the city of Danzig into East Prussia is now completed. But it is not Danzig that has been in the center of the stage this week. Attention has shifted to the Polish-German frontier, particularly in Upper Silesia. In all this area, the populations are mixed. There are people of German race on the Polish side and people of Polish race on the German side. Though it is worth noting that the population of the so-called corridor is 90% Polish. On this frontier, as on the Danzig frontier, there have been various incidents. And after investigating them, the Polish government announced that it had discovered a subversive organization among the German minority. Its existence was not a surprise, but it was thought that the Polish government must have had some good reason for announcing it so plainly and for arresting well over 100 members of the German minority party and of German citizens resident in Poland. After a day or two's detention, most of these people were released. But they are still under supervision, and the Poles seem to be keeping a firm grip on the situation. For one thing, they have closed the whole of the Silesian frontier. This step was taken only after the Germans had closed one section of the frontier and had started preventing Polish workmen living on the German side from going to their work in Poland. But the Poles say they will not reopen it till the Germans reopen the sector they closed. That is all there is to say about Poland's attitude. All the rest has been said long ago and remains unchanged. Similarly, there has been very little news from either London or Paris, and the reason is the same. The policy of both this country and France has been made perfectly clear, and it remains unaltered. If there is a threat to the independence of Poland, which Poland feels it vital to resist, then she will have Britain and France at her side. The violence of the German press, the mysterious comings and goings between the Axis powers, and the repeated assertion that Danzig must return to Germany, have all been received with complete calm.
Dear listeners, let us consider today the words of an outsider, a disinterested party, concerning the European situation. The famous American senator, Mr. Hamilton Fish, said recently, "I am appalled to see the extent of the war psychosis in England and France." During his visit to those countries, Mr. Fish had ample opportunity to get acquainted with the mentality of political leaders as well as with the French and Englishmen in the street. And indeed, a war psychosis is a heavy burden in those countries. But it is by no means accidental. It is the product of systematic agitation. In Paris and London, one wave of rumors follows the other. At the present moment, the most popular lie is the one about alleged dark plans being nurtured by Germany in southeastern Europe. The Hungarians are supposed to be the next on the list. Of course, it goes without saying that Hungary, heretofore considered by the democracies as the most reactionary of countries, will from now on be treated with loving care and consideration by the Western powers. The reason for this artificial consideration is very transparent. According to the British conception, every small nation which does not blindly and unconditionally follow England's policy is exposed to the German danger. This applies to the Baltic states as well as to Hungary, Switzerland, or Belgium. Anyone who is not content to find his happiness in the role of British hireling is a suspicious character. The Hungarian Foreign Minister's private visit with Reich Home Minister Dr. Frick and the ensuing meeting in Rome of Count Sharkey and Mussolini gave rise to a flood of lies in the Paris and London press. The democracies simply cannot grasp the idea that there are many small and medium-sized countries who are anxious to live in neighborly friendship with the totalitarian states. Hungarian foreign policy has, with German aid, achieved two decisive successes in a short time. They are the re-establishment of compulsory military training in Hungary and the acquisition of considerable new territory. These facts cannot be changed by even the most shameless British lie. Furthermore, these maneuvers have a second purpose. It is hoped that they divert international attention from the Danzig problem. A few days ago, a rumor about an impending four-power conference for the solution of the Danzig question flashed through the world press. There was no doubt whatever that these reports originated in London, and they appeared in sensational form in the British press first. But nevertheless, the Reuters agency tried to reverse matters by publishing a long-winded dementi and characterized the Axis powers as the originators of the rumors which had been invented to dash the hopes of the Poles. England intensely admires the patience and calm of the Polish government. From time to time, London feels called upon to encourage Polish chauvinism to new excesses. After all, the victims of the Polish outrages are only Germans. Or does the Foreign Office, by means of cheap flattery, hope to allay the nervousness of Polish army circles concerning certain loans which have failed to appear? Polish militarists are rattling the British sword. Whether they do it out of enjoyment in the game itself, or whether they do it for the purpose of making an impression on Germany, is hard to say. The present tension has been called a war of nerves. But if the foreign press did not persist in constant reference to this source of nervous irritation, nobody in Germany would be concerned with this problem at all. The calm determination of the Axis powers is reflected not only in the reserve of its press and diplomacy. It is the reassuring consciousness of the invincibility of the united German and Italian forces which gives the man in the street the feeling of being amply protected in any case of conflict. The meeting between Reich Foreign Minister von Ribbentrop and Count Czarno at Schloss Fuschl and the ensuing visit of both ministers with the Führer at Obersalzberg have only served to increase our confidence in the firm and unfailing leadership of the Axis powers. Paris and London became restless, and the official information about the course of the conversations did not provide enough sensation for the Paris papers, so there was a wild rush to speculate upon how it might look behind the scenes. But this is apt to be a disappointing undertaking, for the Axis powers behind the scenes present just the same picture as their facade. An honest and inviolable friendship which has stood the tests of bitter days and will in future run true to form. Dear listeners, the Poles are continuing their persecution of Germans, accompanied by the silent approval of the humanitarian democracies. Cold facts tell a more sensational story than any journalistic reports. Up to now, 77,000 refugees have arrived in Germany from Poland. Several thousand have fled to the Bohemia-Moravia Protectorate. The number of arrests of Germans made up to now totals 1,000. In Lemberg and in the province of Galicia, several hundred Ukrainians have been thrown into Polish dungeons. A fact which seems to be very little understood abroad is that Poland is not a national entity, but is composed of many different peoples. Poland boasts of 34 million inhabitants, but only 20 million are really Poles. There are 8 million Ukrainians, 2 million White Russians, 3 or 4 million Jews, and 1,200,000 Germans. When the Polish state was founded in 1919, there were more than 2 million Germans in Poland. Approximately 1 million Germans have been forced out of their homeland by the Poles within the last 20 years. Of 34 million Polish citizens, according to Polish figures, 13 million are non-Poles. This, then, is the political structure of the nation which has been offered the loan of the British sword. The same England whose statesmen are well informed as to the true character of the Poles. No less a man than Lloyd George, who today plays the part of patron saint of Polish imperialism, composed a memorandum during the Versailles Peace Conference in 1919 which included the following sentence. The suggestion to give the Poles 2.1 million Germans must, in my opinion, lead to war in Eastern Europe someday. Count Sforza, Italy's representative in Versailles, in 1919, wrote the following in his book. These Poles were abominable. It was actually nauseating to hear them talk of their many claims and demands. If one were to believe them, it would seem that half of Europe had once been Polish and must be forced to become Polish again. Count Sforza's words are noteworthy because they are conclusive proof of the imperialistic aims of Polish chauvinism, which considers Danzig and the corridor an easy road to East Prussia. Even Mr. Stephen King Hall, England's high-powered advertising man, in his letter of the 7th of October of last year, wrote the following words to the Poles. The indecent haste with which the Polish buzzard swooped down upon the German corpse in 1919 fills a disgraceful page in Polish history. And then Mr. Kinghall produced the following sentence. If Adolf Hitler should suddenly take over Danzig in the Polish corridor, I could almost join in the cries of Sieg Heil. That from the same Mr. Kinghall, who today makes a living by anti-German propaganda and war agitation. And this is the end of our review of the week from the German shortwave stations, which now read out to you latest news. The 27th East German Fair was ceremoniously opened today in Königsberg by district leader Erich Koch. The Führer addressed a message to the fair in which he referred to the tasks of the fair to promote the exchange of goods with eastern neighbors. In conclusion, the Führer sent his best wishes for the success of the eastern fair, which will help to serve peaceful cooperation between the eastern countries. a 5-month-old child of a German national in Szalai in East Upper Silesia, was so brutally ill-treated by a Polish mob that it died shortly afterwards. The father of the child was arrested and thrown into prison, where he was manhandled until he died. His widow, the mother of the cruelly murdered child, was also jailed by the Poles. The incitement of the Polish Free Corps in Eastern Upper Silesia against German nationals resulted in further brutal actions against defenseless German citizens. In Lipiny, in the district of Katowice, armed Polish hordes stormed the dwellings of Germans and demolished all interior fittings. It has not yet been possible to ascertain how many of the defenseless Germans fell into the hands of the Polish hordes. Many Germans succeeded in escaping into the surrounding woods, where they are still hiding. The compulsory examination of the books of German banks and other German-owned monetary institutions in the western Polish provinces is continued by the Polish authorities. The Polish newspaper, Express Poranyi, reports that the manager of the Hohensalza branch office of the German Bank for Trade and Industry has been arrested on a charge of having hoarded silver money. For the same reason, the German cashier of the Stargard branch of the same German bank has been taken into custody. Of 8 German cars which started today in Bern, Switzerland, for the 6th grand prize of Switzerland, 3 Mercedes-Benz cars were 1st, 2nd and 3rd, while the Auto Union were placed 4th and 5th. A German light athletic team succeeded in Cologne in beating an English team after a close struggle before 40,000 spectators. Reich Minister Rudolf Hess sent a telegram to the members of the German team congratulating them. A number of distinguished German diplomats arrived in Hamburg yesterday on board the diesel-driven ship Patria of the Hamburg American Line. The vessel left Valparaiso on the 21st of July. The Chilean minister in Poland, Señor Héctor Briones Luco, the Chilean consul, Roberto Costaval García Huidobro, and the attaché at the Chilean embassy in Denmark, Julio Pivonka. 200 members of the Hungarian National Labour Organization arrived today in Berlin. The Hungarian guests will go on a tour throughout Germany. The British Prime Minister, Mr. Chamberlain, is due to return to London tomorrow morning. The Foreign Secretary, Lord Halifax, has already reached London tonight. The Minister of War, Mr. Hall Belisher, has also interrupted his leave and will arrive in London tomorrow. The Cabinet, which is to meet on Tuesday, will, among other things, also consider the position in the Far East, which has been rendered difficult again, owing to the rupture of the talks in Tokyo. The bodyguards of several members of the British Cabinet have been reinforced, so it is stated by several London papers. These precautionary measures have been taken because Scotland Yard has discovered plans of the Irish Republican Army to kidnap high British statesmen, officers, and industrialists. Several London Sunday papers report that highly placed English personages are to be kidnapped and to be used as hostages, who were to be exchanged against jailed members of the Irish Republican Army. Another attempt to raise the ill-fated British submarine Thetis is to be made next week. British naval experts are rather pessimistic as to the result of this new salvage attempt. So far, the British Admiralty has refused to give up all hopes of raising Thetis. It is generally feared that the prestige of the British Navy would suffer severely if the Thetis cannot be salvaged. British military experts express renewed criticism of the English militia system. Several London newspapers are attacking the British Ministry of War on account of the fact that only about 9,000 militiamen will be called up on 15th September instead of 40,000 as had been originally proposed. It could no longer be doubted, the London press writes, that the introduction of the militia system was a great muddle. The Observer even speaks of confusion in accepting and training the militiamen. Another serious incident occurred last night in Shanghai when a British sergeant of the International Settlement Police Force fired with a machine gun from an armored car on a number of Chinese constables, of whom two were killed and six seriously injured. It is alleged that the British policeman was attacked first. This incident led to a conference today between representatives of the Japanese army at Shanghai, members of the Nanking government and the Shanghai municipality, and of delegates from the administration of the International Settlement. According to Japanese reports, the Japanese army representatives have unanimously decided to take drastic steps to end the anti-Japanese attitude of the International Settlements authorities, which are dominated by British influence. Japanese official quarters declare that the situation in Shanghai is very serious. An official British communique published this evening by the British Foreign Office admits the failure of the Anglo-Japanese talks in Tokyo. The communique states that the talks aimed at the settlement of various questions related to the present situation in Tientsin. Britain approved of a formula which was published at that time in London and Tokyo, in which London admitted various requirements of the Japanese army in China. The statement then deals with the question of the silver holdings and the currency in Tientsin. It was obvious to the British government, it is emphasized today, that the scope of these proposals was outside the Tientsin problem. For this reason, the British government has now informed the Japanese government that a discussion of economic matters could lead to no result, as Britain did not wish to enter into a bilateral agreement with Japan which would affect the position of certain other powers. The spokesman of the Japanese army in Canton confirmed today Japan's intention to complete the blockade of the British zone around Hong Kong. This blockade, so he stated, would be carried through on land as well as at sea. As reason for this measure, it is stated by the Japanese authorities that between the British Crown colony of Hong Kong and the Chinese province of Guangdong, there was a regular and illegal trade in arms and ammunition. Complaints are being voiced in Australia about the gigantic armaments expenditure, says a report from Canberra. When the Australian Parliament meets, the members will be called upon to approve a further increase in armaments expenditure by 5 million Australian pounds. This proposal has already evoked strong criticism because the government proposed to raise the necessary amount by increasing taxes.
The Poles, if they were to undertake a fight for their liberty in case of a conflict which they would like to avoid, will serve again the idea which was expressed in the slogan of their ancestors, "For our liberty and for yours." With such declaration, Mr. Lechniewski, a representative of Poland at the recent meeting of the International Parliamentary Union in Oslo, concluded his speech, in which he presented the aims of present Polish policy. The declaration was taken as a motto by the official Polish paper Gazeta Polska in its leading article today. Such was the part of Poland in history that the self-defense of this country was closely connected with the defense of still wider ideals, those of Christianity against the Tatars or Muslim Turks, and those of the European civilization when Polish armies stopped the march of the invaders who were a threat to the civilization. That is why the Poles fought for the freedom of America, and in 19th century also for the freedom of the other countries. They believe that in such way they are fighting also for their own freedom. And what is the historic mission of the other side now, asked the paper. Even the most minute search for a moral reason for which the Third Reich wishes to bring happiness to the nations of Europe by controlling them would be vain. It would be impossible to find among this inexhaustible production of the Nazi propaganda one single publication which could explain from the moral point of view the right of Germany to her imperialistic expansion and which would try to prove that this expansion has the political, economic, and cultural good of other nations in view. And among the long series of facts already accomplished, don't the experiences of the last 6 months in the Czech Protectorate terrify the nations which had been favorable towards the Reich? The aims which direct the progress of modern Germany have no moral justification. The world cannot become better, wiser, or more beautiful with the realization of the National Socialist doctrine. On the other hand, there is no doubt that the moral attitude of modern Poland adds to the treasury of the European culture and of that of the whole world. It justifies not only the right of the Polish nation to defend its independence, but also the ancient right of Poland to march in the vanguard of all those nations whose freedom has been threatened. The visiting Rome of Count Csaky, the Hungarian foreign minister, aroused much interest there in view of the importance of Hungary in the present international situation and in view of the tension between Poland and Germany. As it is known, Count Csaky returned from Salzburg, where he had conversations with the leaders of the Reich, and it seems that their attempt of persuading Hungary to join the Axis remained vain in spite of the rumors spread by the German propaganda during the past week that the thing has been already done. Herr Hitler will not be able to boast with this much-needed international success at the coming party day at Nuremberg, which is nicely called there a Congress of Peace. The principles of the present policy of Hungary remain unchanged. Full independence, strict neutrality, and good relations with Germany and with Poland. The aim of the visit in Rome was probably to inform the Italian government of this fact. We reported recently about the activities of German propaganda transgressing all limits of probability in their descriptions of the hell of Germans in Poland. An official German paper, the Anbrief, tells a terrible story to its readers about a certain German who was tortured by the Polish police. His hand was squeezed in the door, and then his hair was torn one by one until he was completely bald. When several days later he was let out of the hands of the Polish police, he was nearly mad. Small wonder considering that tearing out of nice tufts of hair one by one is not a quick job which must take at least several days, and it brings credit to the patience of the Polish police. At the same time, the German whose name was kept in bashful silence by the Nazi paper, as well as the date of the place of the incident, must have been a comfort to the readers of the Anbrief, having shown them that cruelty is not a privilege only of the German concentration camps.